Blaine, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, doing well. Got home late last night, as did you. So
yes, well worth it. I get
absolutely
to for an evening, and then get to move off to Minnesota and Austin, and be back again as well for the holiday weekend. As we are looking, you know, you mentioned yesterday in office hours three different things: psychology, philosophy, and physiology. I believe. Yep. If I wasn't correct, three P's. And I believe all three are relevant to marketing. And this training is about specifically the psychology, but obviously the physiology and philosophy are applied to the psychology of marketing, because people buy on emotion for logical reasons. And, you know, within that becomes these three P's. And one of the other things that we mentioned was the idea of how important attention is today. But Napoleon Hill really focused more on something I think that's importantly combined with the attention, which is the currency, the energy, emotion. Attention is intention. You know, what does that currency look like? What does that energy and motion look like? I have a mathematical equation in my marketing philosophy, which is what you pay attention to or get others to pay attention to and give intention to. Do, say, think, feel, and believe, which is that emotion tied to the logic, will equal the coincidences, the coinciding of what you desire. And this is truly, for me, a marketing philosophy. But let's start with attention before we get to Napoleon Hill's intention, the definition of purpose. You know, we're a little bit longer in the tooth. We definitely come from a traditional business background. There has always been a value in attention. But today, as Shakespeare stated, everyone has a capability of getting unbelievable amount of attention. What issues come up today because of the accessibility that we have to 7.6 billion people that possibly could be paying attention to our product, service, or solution?
For me, I think the greatest difficulty, and this is something that I've, you know, witnessed emerge, as you mentioned, we have kind of a traditional background experience in business. It's the lifespan of attention. We would have a full minute perhaps on a television, a traditional television show, back in the 50s, to pitch our product, as it were, and it was a three channel opportunity. I mean, you've got ABC, CBS, NBC. That's what you had. Now we've got so many different channels, so many different delivery mechanisms, and the bite that I get to communicate has moved from 1 minute to 10 seconds. If I don't grab somebody in 10 seconds, and that's not to say that the hook wasn't there before, but the hook becomes the message. In today's marketing, the hook becomes the message.
Yeah, it's so interesting. We were with David Goldberg, who's an expert in prosody. And so he said something that really was surprising to me. He said, people make a judgment. You know, the ambassador of first impressions is your receptionist at your business, but people make their first impression by the first word you speak, the frequency, the tonation, the strength, the confidence, the comfortability you have, the deep, strong voice. It is actually within the first word that people will make a judgment and go ahead and attach emotionally to whether they like, trust, want to do business with you, buy from you, sell for you. Some of the other stuff in this idea of attention is traditional, things like speaking directly to a problem, making sure that you're of service or value. What are some of the other things that are similar today, considering the short attention plan, that the value obviously of the hook becomes far greater than it ever has been because you don't have time to articulate the reasons, impacts, and capabilities like in the past. But what are some of the other similarities today that are necessary in getting attention today?
Identity. Yeah. Is that thing me? The resonance occurs when identity is tapped into. And if the product marketing pitch, the hook, has a frequency that is associated with my sense of my identity, it's very subliminal, it's very subjective, but that resonance is almost impossible to not pay attention to. Yeah. If I've done my job well as a marketer.
You know, it's so interesting in this idea of attention. I think there's two levels of intention. You know, one is how critical it is to get the initial attention because there's so much noise and so many people. But to me, there seems to be a greater hunger once you get the initial attention of maintaining and sustaining attention because, you know, our VIP dinners, the masterminds, the shows, you know, I see people doing workshops that Dr. Joe and Tony Robbins, you know, a week that people are spending giving attention to something they care about, you know, that is speaking to an issue. And maybe some of the issue is exactly this issue that there's too much noise. I'm overwhelmed. I'm separate from, and that's why people want to be part of this polis, yeah, this social grouping. Do you see there's a trend, you know, if we can get someone's initial attention, that actually people want to pay more attention for a longer period of time?
Yeah, I absolutely think that's true, David. And I think your meetups are a great example of this. The dinners are a great example of this. Part of what happens here is, how do people feel about themselves when they're in the presence of my marketing, in the presence of my service or my product? How do they feel about themselves? If I can tap into that dynamic and have them feel good about themselves when they're in the presence of my service, my product, my offer, they're going to keep coming back. Again, there's repetition in that because, again, at a subjective subliminal level, I feel good about me. Yeah. Yeah. I'm the kind of person who would buy this. This now becomes a way of saying, from an identity perspective, I'm home. I'm home.
Yeah. And that brings up kind of the second lesson. And if anybody would like, you know, people buy an emotion for logical reasons, how to pay attention, just email me, David means beloved at the first initial, Meltzer means servant. Let me be that beloved servant, as we're mentioning. Email me, David at themeltzer.com. But the second lesson is exactly about feelings. You've been speaking on stages for so many years. And one thing that is held true is that people won't remember. They won't pay attention to what we say, which is something we went over in the listening lesson yesterday on Office Hours, which was one of my favorites, by the way. Bradley killed it in, you know, just dropping bombs, explaining things about how people hear or listen, the functionality of the eyes, the ears, the nose, and the mouth. But people buy on those feelings, not the features, not the price even, just like on stage, they'll remember how they felt. When you know this, what are some of the things that we could do in marketing that you have found to connect feelings so that they'll remember with your product, service, or solution?
I think the thing that works most effectively is story. Rather than going immediately to a pitch around features or distinctions, a bit of a story, and it doesn't take long to hook a story. But that story, people will remember the story before they remember the feature, before they will remember the advantage that this might bestow on me. They'll remember the story. And even if they remember don't remember the product's name, the story will be something that they will keep coming back to, and they will, it will bother them because they can't remember the product that was embedded in the story. So they will actively go searching for the product, which is a fascinating dynamic from a psychological perspective.
Yeah, it's so interesting because it's so easy to find products if you can remember the story, which is another advantage of storytelling today. And we had a guest yesterday on Office Hours. I keep coming back because it was such an extraordinary experience, even for me, who has done 10 seasons of it alongside of you, plus 890 episodes of it digitally. And you've been there since the beginning. But John Polo wanted to start when he started coaching with me, but also wanted to start the show. You got to know my story.
Yep.
And that story resonated with everybody on the panel because he picked a story that was so mass common about life cycle. And there wasn't one panelist that didn't get choked up. There wasn't one panelist that didn't have strong feelings towards the story. And once again, you know, we have about approximately 23 interviews each and every episode, day of filming, three episodes. And again, that's the one that I remember.
Yeah,
that made me feel the strongest. And I know you and the other two co-hosts felt the same way. So in that storytelling, it's really interesting that you have this emotional outcome. He took us through the entire story and he gave us his emotional outcome and we could identify and align with that. Is there beyond making somebody feel, actually I'll move past that because it's so important to tell a story that moves people and pick a thing. You know, dogs are the most used characters in a commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Because just like the story that John Polo told, and it was about, you know, losing a loss, you know, a loss of someone he loved, which is common to every single person in varying degrees. Their own feelings came out. Dogs also evoke a mass feeling. And so when, you know, you're watching a commercial for some pharmaceutical company, look how many times they have a dog in there. For no reason. The drug has nothing to do with dogs, you know. And so we want to remember by using even visualization. So if anybody would like to learn more about how people buy on feelings, not features, just email me, david@dmeltzer.com. It's an extraordinary marketing lesson that we can use in storytelling. The real traditional confluence is not just feelings, but why we want to do all of these things. And it's to align in trust. You know, I teach in pitching and in business and in marketing and in sales, this idea of trust. And for me, it's so important that it is the most critical thing. And the reason is I always tell people, if you're 100% credible, you literally could tell. And I've never reached 100% credibility, nor would I deserve that, by the way. But if you were 100% credible, all you would have to do is tell someone, buy my car for $600,000, and they would do it with no questions asked. That's what 100% credibility does for you in marketing and sales. So in that same line of thought, the more credible we are, the higher the statistical success, the less we have to communicate to get someone to buy the car for $600,000. And so trust to me is the most, even beyond emotion, even though people buy emotion and feelings as lesson one and two talk about, but people overlook credibility. So what they'll do is they'll not practice credibility. So they'll unintentionally create skepticism. And the minute somebody doubts what you're saying, even if your intentions are true, you may have embellished or oversold out of great hope and inspiration or excitement about the love of your product, service, or solution. But the minute you lose credibility, what do? They start looking for why not to buy. They take things that are true and start looking at them as, oh, that can't be true. Oh, I don't. And so this is why credibility is the foundation of influence. Where and how can we practice, I should say, this idea, because it's just natural sometimes when we love our product to oversell, back end sell. Sometimes we inadvertently lie, manipulate, or even cheat our story. You know, and I'll give you an example because I do so many shows. I had an excited entrepreneur, a startup, say, my revenue's up 300%. Now, I trust what people say, so I have no problem vetting what they say. So I said, well, really, what was your revenue last year? $90. Now, that ruined everything else he ever was going to tell me. But what he told me was true, Blaine.
Yeah.
But that's a manipulation and overselling, a back-end selling. You could even say it's a lie, but it's not a lie. And so how can we help people to self-reflect their own credibility to help them have the statistical success that the high credibility gives us, even beyond feelings?
That's a great question. And I love that example, because prima facie, it was true. I mean, it was up 300%. And that's the problem with statistics. Again, I'm going to come back to the use of stories and consistency. You are a master at consistency. I mean, and this is one of the mantras that you talk about. People will begin to develop. And here's the fascinating thing for me. If I'm marketing well, what I end up developing is loyalty, which is a non-transactional function. If I'm marketing for the moment, what I'm developing is satisfaction. Satisfaction is easy to break. Loyalty is difficult to break. So if I'm, with consistency over time, what happens is people begin to feel, and again, it's targeted specifically. This is where niche marketing comes into play. There's that identity piece, how I feel about me when I'm in the presence of this service or product. All of a sudden now loyalty, it is me. There's that piece that comes into play. So you can stub your toe once in a loyalty scenario and okay, it's going to be fine. Yeah. You stub your toe once in a satisfaction transactional sort of a thing. It's kind of like all of a sudden you've inserted doubt. Yeah. And this is the difficulty in using customer satisfaction metrics as opposed to customer loyalty metrics.
It is such a great point. And even within the context of the last show that we did, there was extreme weather across the country and so many people did not make the meetup. So many people did not make the dinner, including me and Nick. And yet, because of the consistent behavior and the trust in the community and the value of the experience, there was it was different. It was different. There's a different person raising money for the charity, a different person emceeing the event, a different person that was there for the meetup that became a networking meetup. You know, not my normal ask me anything, but it all had value and there was trust in the value in the community. If the consistency wasn't there, even as the leader, I would have had doubt. Oh my gosh, everybody's gonna, complain, that, they were oversold that I would be there. And instead there was just so much gratitude. And I thought it was, beautiful that it may have been a better experience without Nick and I, in some respects, which I, enjoy. That joy of missing out and, the pride that I took in the fact that it wasn't about me. It was about this consistent experience that we were providing, this frequency that we're providing. And there wasn't one person there that isn't waiting for us to come back to Las Vegas to do it again because of the value and what we consistently do in the influence and credibility and trust as a foundation that, although we represented, we would be there at 5 p.m. and didn't get there till 8 p.m. Sometimes when mistakes are made, you can build credibility by the way that you react to it as well. And I think that was a perfect example for us. If anybody would like a credibility document, I have a perfect type of 5 to thrive system of understanding credibility, emotional attachment, reasons, impacts, and capabilities that utilizing credibility as a statistic that Blaine and I love compared to 99% of all statistics are made up, which is my favorite. Speaking of being repetitive and consistent, you talked about repetition and consistency. This is truly what creates a belief. We're working through Napoleon Hill's intention of what we do, say, think, feel, and believe. A lot of people think of Napoleon Hill of just belief. To establish a belief, you have to do, say, think, and feel in order to believe. And this is only achieved by repetition or consistent behavior. Why is that, Blaine? Is there a conscious continuum? Is there a physiological, psychological, or philosophy behind repetition?
There's a physiological dynamic in play. And I forget exactly who the attribution should go to on this, but the saying is neurons that fire together, wire together. And that has to do with the brain's biology. And that's how we create memories. It's how we create belief systems. Over time, the neurons, the tendites in the brain, begin to fuse together. They've been, you know, they connect synapses and pathways for information to travel. And just like anything in nature, the path of least resistance becomes the path that is most preferred. And from a marketing perspective, repetition begins to carve a channel. And a channel is something that information can now default to when it begins to be activated. And the whole message doesn't have to come into play. Just, I mean, your jingle, you know, that you start at the beginning of the show, the phone number jingle, all of a sudden, you know, you don't need the whole jingle, but it starts to move. That's the way that belief systems are put into place. And from a marketing perspective, the reason that marketers use jingles, and then again, we're going to kind of go back into our ancient history here with television ads and whatnot. But jingles were used because they're easy to remember, and that idea of remembering creates a pathway. You wonder where the yellow went when you brush your teeth with Pepsodent. Now, that's a really old jingle, but that was used to sell toothpaste.
Yeah.
And it had embedded in it the message, the value, but it was easy to remember. And this is kind of where belief systems get created. Now, a memory is essentially a belief system. That's essentially what a memory is.
Yeah, so smart. You know, 1-800-CARS-FOR-KIDS, donate yep. your car today. My objective of having my jingle was to be able to have people like me be able to say, 1-800-CARS-FOR-KIDS, donate your car today, which I actually did because I could remember the number because of the jingle. And the reason is there's a conscious continuum. And if anybody would like exercise or guide on how to utilize repetition in a conscious continuum, and what I mean by that is that we have a cellular memory that's very short-term and stupid. It just remembers for the day. And so, but it takes a minimum of 21 days, a minimum of 21 days to communicate with the subconscious and determinative alignment in the subconscious mind, which is 80% of our negative thoughts, by the way, that is repetitive all day long. It's an automatic remembrance into a quantum memory, which is the unconscious competency. And so determinative upon your genetic and energetic inheritance. So I'll use alcohol as an example. You know, it frustrates me when it says 21 days till you can form a habit or change a habit. That's only in consideration. That's a minimum of what's in your subconscious mind and also your quantum being. You know, that's why they have the 12 steps. That's why they have AA, because tons of people have been sober for years. And they take one drink and they are back into their quantum habit, because sometimes it takes lifetimes to change the hard drive, the conscious competencies that we have. So there is a conscious continuum, but the first step of remembrance, recollecting, and reminding with the quantum, with the infinite, is consistent behavior, so that the daily memory is remembered, and that when we can attach it to feelings or attach it to music, which creates a feeling, we remember it much better. Just like you remembered something. I'm sure there's a lot of stuff in the fifth grade when that commercial was going on that you don't remember, but somehow you remembered the words there. But I promise you, you can quote, you know, Hamlet or whatever they were teaching in the fifth grade. But this is the way that the conscious works, and the conscious is a witness. And how do we evoke all that exists today, which we do? Moving on, though, if anybody wants the conscious continuum, exercise or guide, just email me, david@dmeltzer.com, david@dmeltzer.com. And going into, if I can here, my next note, of the day here, and I'm having trouble with my there you go. Okay. Which is apropos, right? Clarity converts confusion, and confusion will be repelled when we are clear, harmonized, and focused. I would say clarity, spectrum, and strength of signal are what allow us to have the statistical success. Where do people fall down? You know, there's so many people that are in love with their product, but when they tell you about it, even in their marketing materials, you have no idea what they do. I mean, how many times when we're coaching, mentoring, teaching, or on a TV show, Blaine, are you like, hey, sounds great, but I have no idea what you do. And we're stuck because there's no clarity. What are some of the things you've learned about this?
Yeah, well, the simple one is a confused mind never acts. You know, yes. We'll just start with that. And if my marketing message is so cluttered, and this is the signal to noise ratio, you know, you mentioned this just a moment ago. I want the message to be crystal clear so that there is no doubt about what is up. And what is up has to do with benefit, not features and advantages. The marketing messages that don't work will confuse the story that I want to deliver the message through with the actual act of marketing. The story is a carrier wave, but if the story is so convoluted or so filled with stuff, the core of the message doesn't get through. So I want to be very specific about what's the carrier wave that is being linked and directed here. And oftentimes fewer words are a lot better than a whole lot of words.
Yeah, it's so true, because a clear message has a greater spectrum. It reaches more people, but it also has a stronger signal for people to remember. And so for me, it's important that you have confirmation, because you need to remember, you know, that the leading into the confusion, nobody acts on confusion, but they also don't buy from you. But even the more clear it is, the more people sell for you, even if they don't buy from you. You know, the key to the success of building our community has been people buying, showing up for us, but also selling for us. Yep. You know, there's so many people that are in our shows, masterminds, meetups, holding courts, interviews, that haven't ever talked to our team, but have talked to people that are in our community. So they're buying from you and selling, because if there isn't a clear message, they can't repeat it themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That simple message is repeatable by others, in which creates an exponentiality to the message, to the marketing. And it's one in which is the guaranteed foundation of a successful company. Companies like Apple, you know, you and I have probably sold more Apple products because they have a clear message of, hey, this product does this amazingly well. And, I know in my own personal life, I've never been paid by Apple, but I've sold millions of dollars of Apple products. And I was CEO of Samsung's phone division. So you can imagine how clear their message is in their branding, in their taglines, and in their, which leads us to the last, their value. You know, value service is the most powerful marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. Because it allows it to thrive. It is what, beyond clarity, true value is what will allow people to sell for you, give you that exponentially. I sold one product. Every product I sell, somebody sells 10 people my product because of value. You're not going to believe the deal I got. You're not going to believe what this thing does. You're not going to believe it gives me more of what I like, more of what's working, more of what I know. It takes away what I don't like, what's not working, or I don't know. Oh, I got to get that. And here, especially because of the nature of the virtual side of things today, when we talk about going viral, it was very difficult on TV for it to go viral in a fast way.
Yeah.
Now it takes a matter of seconds in 50 million people, right? I still blow my mind. I think my biggest video has 53 million views. If that held a product other than I, imagine how many people would be ordering that product. You know, if I had some sort of hat or something that resonated, and that's why 53 million, they were not sharing the value of my statement, which they love the value of my story. That's why it went viral.
That's it.
Right. But if it was a product, you could imagine how strong of a marketing tool that is. Service is the most powerful strategy. You have lived your entire life of service and of value. Why is that, though? Why would value trump all of these other lessons?
I'm going to come in. The value of service will trump them all, I think, because Well, we'll go, you know, full circle. Identity. I want to believe I'm a good person. Okay. And I think that's germane to everybody on the planet. I want to believe I'm a good person. And if the values proposition taps into that identity and there's a sense of belonging, I want to belong to that tribe. The Edelman surveys that continue to, you know, track what companies are doing in terms of social responsibility, those sorts of things. People will buy far more, and this is particularly true of the younger generations, they will typically buy and frequent companies that are doing things that are in alignment from a values perspective with the consumer. So if I know that you as a, you know, I mean, and I think that our work with the Unstoppable Foundation, the philanthropic work with the different charities that we work with, that taps into a sense of belonging and identity. And it also taps into a value, the service value. You're not just taking my money to, you know, to get rich. You're doing something with it. Money is energy. Where's that energy being targeted? What's that energy actually producing? What's it being designed to build? Those sorts of things come in. And I'm a good person. I want to be part of that.
I love it.
That's kind of what that comes into.
Service is everything. If you can articulate that value to exceed what you're asking for, the statistical success would be great. And if anybody would like the exercise or guide on the value of value, the value of service as the most valuable currency in marketing, in the psychology, the physiology, and the philosophy of marketing, which this training is about, email me, david@dmeltzer.com. Before I let you go answer some questions, Blaine, so I can get on my next plane to get to Minnesota. I want to remind everyone that people buy on emotion for logical reasons, that trust is and credibility is truly the foundation of all influence, that repetition, consistency will create belief of what we do, say, think, and feel, that clarity will strengthen your signal, widen your spectrum, will convert. And remember, as Blaine says, that nobody acts when they're confused. And that means in this case, they're not going to buy. Understand that the value, the service is the most powerful of all the philosophies, psychologies, and physiologies that exists in marketing today. And if you do so, and I promise this, you'll understand the psychology of marketing, the physiology attached to it, and the philosophy that we shared today. If anybody would like that, exercise guides and books. Once again, remember, there's no music to it. Remember, beloved servant. Beloved David at the first initial Meltzer servant, email your beloved servant, david@dmeltzer.com. Inherent in that is the lessons of marketing that we taught today, david@dmeltzer.com. But I promise with these exercises, guides, and books, you will make a lot of money for the sake of helping others and having fun. And if you do that, I promise you one thing, you will be happy. And if you're happy, that will make Blaine and I happy. God bless everyone. And remember, be more interested than interesting. Be kind to your future self and do good deeds.